Australia is one of the five eyes in the intelligence sharing alliance that includes the UK, US, Canada and New Zealand. But should we have more eyes in the Pacific? A recent policy brief from the Lowy Institute proposes a similar intelligence sharing alliance in the Pacific involving Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea and Fiji. And that proposal caught our eyes this week. Pretty well all the major transnational threats facing the world at the moment, climate change, cyber attacks, great power competition, organised crime and political instability, play out in the Pacific in a big way. And those factors are amplified by limitations in resources to counter these threats. Mihai Sora is the author of the Lowy Institute's policy proposal. He's a former diplomat and intelligence analyst and now the Pacific Islands Program Director at the Lowy Institute. Mihai, thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
It's a real pleasure to speak with you.
So you've proposed a Pacific Eyes Agreement to transform regional security cooperation. Could you explain for us what you mean by that and how it would work?
Look, we all know that the security environment in our region, around Australia, in Southeast Asia, basically globally, is changing very, very quickly. Now, in the last couple of years, Australia and New Zealand, as well as other partners, have really stepped up their investment and their security cooperation with Pacific Island countries, in some cases targeting transnational threats directly, in other cases helping to build the capacity of Pacific Island countries to empower them to be responsible security actors in their own region. Now, in my agreement, what I propose is quite simply a formal physical system of continuous intelligence sharing between intelligence professionals in Port Moresby, in Suva, in Wellington, and in Canberra. Something that day-to-day analysts and intelligence professionals can use as a resource to better shape threat assessments, to better inform political decision-making, and in time, to better shape the strategic choices that Pacific countries are faced with on a daily basis.
Mihai, how much is actually known outside of government circles about what current intelligence sharing arrangements are in place in the Pacific?
We know that in the intelligence community, your typical intelligence professional is very shy about public acknowledgement, very sensitive about political acknowledgement of cooperation and dialogue where that exists. Now, we do know that there are bilateral arrangements where on an ad hoc basis, you know, through individual relationships, information is shared with Pacific Island country counterparts. Most typically, we see this at very, very senior levels. For example, in advance of Solomon Islands ultimately signing their secretive security deal with China, we saw a flurry of high-level delegations from Canberra, as well as other security partners, fly in to meet with the Solomon Islands Prime Minister at the time, Sogavare, effectively, you know, carrying a briefcase full of intelligence assessments and reports seeking to sway the Prime Minister's mind at the time. That sort of last-ditch effort kind of amounts to a prospective groom running down the aisle just as a wedding is about to be concluded, saying, no, 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 stop, come with me instead. What I'm proposing is that instead of these high-visibility political actions or these less visibility but more infrequent and informal activities, that there is an acknowledged political and security relationship between four countries that right now are enjoying an unprecedented degree of strategic trust at the same time as the region is facing unprecedented transnational threats.
In the course of reading your proposal, I discovered the names of a whole bunch of centres and organisations that I must admit I wasn't fully aware of the work of. Things like the Pacific Fusion Centre and the Pacific Transnational Crime Network. What do those centres do, and how would a Pacific Eyes Agreement enhance or be different from what they're doing?
It's really about depth, and it's about providing timely operational intelligence. So the centres and the arrangements that are in place currently, you know, they all speak to this impulse among Pacific countries and Australia and New Zealand included to strengthen regional collective responses to security threats. But what they amount to in practice is either a political commitment or an arrangement where you have the heads of representative organisations friends meeting on an annual basis, obviously sharing intelligence, sharing assessments and so on, but not really something that's usable to the day-to-day security actor, be it police or military or intelligence in these countries. So it's really about proposing a secure communications network that Australia, New Zealand would share with Port Moresby and with Suva. So that's a new element, actually trusted, secure government communications that would enable security professionals to exchange information with the confidence that it's not going to be penetrated or leaked. And it's also about empowering all of the different security actors in a way that is operationally useful for them. You know, the Pacific Fusion Center is an excellent example of a regional attempt at getting close to that operationally useful intelligence sharing network, but it doesn't have a mandate to handle classified information. It doesn't have access to even basic things like Pacific policing databases. In many ways, it's hamstrung for a number of reasons. Resourcing is one, but also it's one thing to suggest an arrangement between four trusted security partners. It's another thing to try to organize every single Pacific Island country, every single member of the Pacific Islands Forum to come together and demonstrate what is really a very intimate level of political and strategic trust. And I think we're not quite there yet as a region. Pacific governments are often reluctant to share sensitive information between themselves. So the pilot group that I propose really is about leveraging this current moment of really high levels of trust between the four capitals of these countries.
Yes, so there are four nations that you've identified, and I think that explains why you've probably gone for the name Pacific Eyes instead of Four Eyes, Mihai. But Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, and Papua New Guinea are the countries. So what is it about Fiji and PNG in particular that make them, if you like, the appropriate starting point for this sort of intelligence sharing arrangement in the Pacific?
A key part is political trust, and I don't want to hammer that point home too much, but you know, we've recently signed a mutual defense treaty with Papua New Guinea, and it's very difficult to imagine an equivalent expression of the deep levels of trust and security interdependency that such a treaty implies. We've also heard Prime Minister Rabuka of Fiji saying, well, actually, I want one of those for Fiji as well, yeah, between Fiji and Australia. Now, New Zealand is also elevating its security ties with Papua New Guinea, with Fiji. So that trust element is a key plank in this agreement. And it does set these countries aside from how other relationships are playing out in the Pacific. But equally, it's the capability of Papua New Guinea and Fiji. So PNG and Fiji both right now are very rapidly modernizing and professionalizing their national intelligence communities. You know, that involves things like legislative changes, regulations, capability uplifts, restructuring their whole architecture of their national security systems, respectively. And my proposal is designed basically to create this opening for Australia and New Zealand to be the partners that help these two countries as they build up their national security capabilities, as they become contributors to regional security outcomes. It's been a long-term ambition for both Port Moresby and Suva to be seen as primarily contributors rather than beneficiaries of regional security cooperation. And I think that they're very rapidly moving into that space, and it's so important for Australia and New Zealand to be a part of that journey. The one element that has been underdone in the flurry of activity that we've seen in the last few years, the one thing that national security officials across the Pacific are calling out for is closer intelligence sharing, more structured, resilient, secure systems for sharing intelligence on a daily basis between the people that actually work on these issues rather than at that top representative level.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Mihai Sora, Pacific Islands Program Director of the Lowy Institute, about his proposal for a Pacific Eyes intelligence sharing agreement. Mihai, you describe the Five Eyes Alliance as the world's most sophisticated and durable intelligence sharing framework. What are the lessons from the way that alliance was formed and has developed, which you think would be translatable to a Pacific Eyes arrangement?
The comparison is really just there to to help people imagine what such an arrangement would look like. The lessons that could be transplanted would be around the protocols that are established that give political and national security officials the confidence to actually pass information, and the governance arrangements. You know, there isn't one key driver of the Five Eyes Alliance. Each partner is a peer-to-peer contributor. They both receive as well as deliver intelligence and feed intelligence into that arrangement. So it's very important for any agreement that has Australia and New Zealand, obviously two of the larger countries and more capable countries in the region, that there are steps, very clear steps taken to ensure that there's transparency, that sovereignty is that sovereignty is strengthened and made more resilient, rather than it being a case of, you know, asking Port Moresby and Suva to open their doors to Australian intelligence efforts. It's really about ensuring that each of the four partners are contributing evenly, that they each have an equal stake in the governance, in the management of the arrangement, and that, you know, the tasking and the sharing protocols are consistently interrogated to make sure that they're up to speed, that they're fit for purpose, and that all countries are still politically comfortable with the arrangement. So, you know, it's not a set and forget network that you just plug in and walk away from. It's one that does require nurturing and monitoring, particularly given that it would be such a leap forward in terms of the actual security cooperation between Australia, New Zealand and these Pacific partners.
As well as focusing on four nations initially, you also advocate for a phased rollout and an incremental approach. Where would you start and why?
The point of this, of the pilot group, is picking the four most likely candidates to be able to stand it up and get it on its legs. But the point overall of a Pacific intelligence sharing arrangement is to empower the region not to be dependent on external security actors, to come to their own assessments using their own intelligence base on critical global issues, on regional security issues, on the potential threat posed by China's strategic intent, on cybersecurity actors, and the whole list of it. So it really is important to put this arrangement together with an eye to expanding. Now, other countries, you know, it's contingent, again, on the key elements of that strategic trust, as well as their own capabilities. So I would imagine that there would be interest from countries like Tonga, potentially Samoa, to be contributors. Even a country like Vanuatu, that is an active security player, you know, depending on how the Nakamal agreement shakes out between Australia and Vanuatu, we might see a transformation in that relationship that would then make it more feasible to consider Vanuatu as a member of this grouping, for example.
What are the areas of cooperation and intelligence sharing that, in your view, are potentially less sensitive and therefore the things that these nations should focus on first when stepping into this sort of arrangement?
So in the transnational crime space, the region is facing a huge problem with international drug cartels and how they're operating through the region, as well as taking up root in the region, in Fiji, in Papua New Guinea and other Pacific countries. So that one strikes me as a no-brainer. Illegal fishing is a perennial problem for Pacific Island countries. And more recently and very rapidly, cybersecurity. That's an area where Australia is already providing assistance with responses to cybersecurity. There are certainly underway efforts to strengthen the resilience of government information systems in the Pacific. Through this arrangement, Australia and New Zealand working together could extend the sort of a cybersecurity blanket to the member countries, helping to strengthen their government systems as well as the systems that are used by businesses and communities. Of particular benefit to Papua New Guinea and Fiji would be assistance with economic assessments. Now, both those countries are always looking for foreign investment. They're always considering big government deals in terms of digital transformation, suppliers and providers, but any kind of investment, they could benefit from the intelligence and assessment capabilities of more established players in that space, Australia, New Zealand, to help with their foreign investment screening, for example. And then finally, climate change is one that, you know, it's a problem that has many, many different aspects. One aspect that is underdone, according to the Pacific Islands Forum and individual Pacific countries, is the intelligence sharing aspect. Now, Pacific countries frequently don't have the resources, the technical resources, to be able to gather the data, to identify the trends, and to assess the potential points of conflict within their countries, or the damage to their economies, or the damage to the physical environment when it comes to climate change. So these are some key areas that I would see as immediately contributing to the security dividends for the member Pacific countries, as well as helping to build those habits of trust between intelligence professionals across the four different countries.
And of course, looming in this proposal, as it does in all Pacific matters, is the increasing role of China as a regional player in security and other areas, and as a potential threat, as you described it earlier. Mihai, is there a risk that a public initiative like this might end up just intensifying China's strategic push into the region rather than counteracting it?
I think what contributes to that competition is actually the hedging and the wavering of individual Pacific countries. So where they either seek to make, you know, no commitments to any country, or they make multiple conflicting commitments between China and a traditional security partner, I think that's what stokes competition. What we've seen from Papua New Guinea and Fiji, in fact, both the leaders of those two countries come out and very clearly articulate that they want to build security cooperation with trusted partners, and they want to increase their trade ties with lucrative markets. So they've bifurcated relations with China, keeping it in that trade and economic space, and relations with countries like Australia, New Zealand, and the United States. Also, you know, leveraging the economic potential there, but definitely looking to those traditional partners for security ties. So Papua New Guinea and Fiji make this very simple. Their own policy decisions are actually serving to diffuse the competition in the region. It's other countries that are looking to sort of play all sides off against each other that are encouraging that competition. So overall, the effect of such an agreement would actually be to bring stability to some of that competitive space.
And just finally, Mihai, I imagine if you had been contacted by the head of Australia's overseas intelligence organisation, ASIS, you probably wouldn't be able to tell us about it. But can you give us a sense of how your proposal's been received in Pacific policy circles and maybe in Canberra?
There's certainly a lot of interest in that idea. I know that it's being widely read in Canberra. I know that it's being widely debated in Port Moresby and in Suva. It's made some of the local press in those two countries as well. There's a lot of interest because it's a straightforward concept. It's so obviously something that Australia and New Zealand should be aspiring to, but it's definitely not a straightforward concept to implement. So I think there's a lot of cautious interest where different officials are looking at what can we build on that we're already doing, or what do we need to do to get to the stage we actually have this secure network where you have intelligence professionals in these four different capitals able to access a shared database where they pull their intelligence reports and their intelligence assessments, they come together to discuss strategic issues, and we build that shared strategic picture. And we're more aligned in our decisions, you know, not just in a way where Australia and New Zealand are rolling over Pacific countries, but in a way that all assessments are mutually informed from these four different perspectives. So I know there's a lot of interest, but I'm also realistic that it's quite an ambitious proposal. Mm. I think the point of publishing it now, writing about it now, is that this is a moment in time when we should be ambitious, because the security needs of the region demand us to think of bold ideas and take steps that we haven't yet.
Mihai Sora, thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Great to chat.
And Mihai is the Pacific Islands Program Director at the Lowy Institute, and he wrote the recent Lowy Policy Brief, a Pacific Eyes Intelligence Sharing Agreement.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.